An Australia Day award recipient says the summer of bushfires is a wake-up call about how brittle some of our current infrastructure is and flags questions about the infrastructure of the future too. Distinguished Professor Genevieve Bell was appointed an officer of the Order of Australia this weekend. An anthropologist, she founded and leads the Australian National University's Autonomy Agency and Assurance Institute, which looks at issues in artificial intelligence, data and technology, and their impact on humanity and the environment. She also spent 20 years in Silicon Valley with big tech firms looking at such issues. I spoke to Professor Bell earlier.
Yeah, terrifying one. It was a big surprise. And it's one of those things where you think, oh, God, and you take a deep breath. So, yeah, big surprise, big responsibility.
What sort of responsibility do you see in terms of your work and your mission, I guess?
My mum, who's also kind of an amazing woman in her own right, really raised my brother and I to think you had a moral obligation to make the world a better place and that you had to fight with all your being to ensure that the world was better for, like, all kinds of people, not just you. And so her kind of point was always to say, once you got into the room where the decisions were being made, you had to make sure you brought as many other voices with you. And I think for me, one of the reasons this feels like a big responsibility is that I know that awards like this give you symbolic power and they open up other conversations. So it's about how do you make sure you take advantage of that opening to bring as many different voices and as much of the conversation with you. I mean, that's sort of why it feels like a daunting responsibility.
Well, let me go to one particular line in your acceptance statement where you say that this summer has consolidated your fears about the urgency of considering our impact on this planet and how we have to connect this to our technology-dominated future. That is huge stuff. What have the bushfires got to do, and I assume that's what you're largely referring to here, the bushfires got to do with our technology future?
So there's this amazing British writer, man named William Gibson. Back in 2003, he was asked to describe the future, and the journalist asking him, I think, imagined that he was going to tell this story about some distant future. And what Gibson said was, the future's already here, it's just unevenly distributed. And I always thought that was a really provocative statement because it means that you can see the future in the present if you know how to look for it. And I think for me, the way I've come out of the summer so far feeling is that we are the future. This is what the future of the planet and of the relationship between humans and the ecosystem and tech could feel like. I don't think it has to be the future. It doesn't have to be everyone's future, but it feels like I've had a glimpse into the world that is coming, and it's a daunting and scary one. And so for me, thinking about what does this summer mean and why does it relate to technology has to do with a couple of things, right? One is that I think if you were anywhere on the south coast of Victoria and New South Wales this summer or in South Australia, you came to realize that a series of the infrastructures that we've been building the future on were much more brittle than you imagined. Telecommunications system, the electrical system, the water, roads, all of those things were suddenly much more brittle. So I worry about that piece. And then I think there's this sort of secondary piece, which is that much of the technology that is coming doesn't just require those infrastructures, it requires new infrastructures. And those new things are at the moment incredibly energy intensive. So 18 months ago, the figures that came out suggested that the server farms of the world, so the places that hold all of our data, they were consuming about 10% of the world's electricity budget. And that feels like a lot. So imagining that we're building a future where some of the infrastructure is more brittle than it appeared and the things that are coming require more energy than we have to give, for me felt like a moment of considerable pause.
I mean, many Australians are just caught up in the emotion of this thing. You've gone much further beyond that. But we don't seem to be bringing our politicians anywhere near that conversation that you're talking about. We don't even have an energy policy in this country, although I'm sure the government would dispute me on that. Are you concerned that our politicians are just not grasping the enormity of this thing?
Linda, I mean, you could turn that question on its head and say, am I overly intellectualizing a moment where I should be thinking about what the human cost and the ecological and animal cost has been? And for me, those things are incredibly hard to talk about. I mean, I found myself at the limits of my language in some ways. And trying to think through how do we move from what we are seeing here to something that feels like there's a path through was really important to me. And I think bringing a community and a series of communities along for whom the reality of this summer is still there, right? I mean, Canberra has been blanketed in smog. The beaches I spent my childhood on are still burning or hard to get to or both. We've seen a loss of life, a loss of habitat, a loss of infrastructure and buildings and livelihoods. And I think for a lot of people, the pain and grief and anger and rage and silence in all of that will take a little while to get through. But yeah, I think there's a huge responsibility on a whole series of civil, civic, political, industrial organizations to propel the conversation forward. Yes, we need to have a moment of, I think, recognizing the grief of it, right, the elegy of it. But I also think we need to find a way to have the next conversation that propels us forward.
I mean, for those of us who understand the science of climate change, we are looking at a limited time frame to take action on that issue by itself. But you're layering on top of that, you know, thinking about a real future for us that is embedded in technology, but also embedded in humanity. Very complicated stuff. How are you going to tell that story during, you know, given your new award, how are you going to tell that story to the bulk of Australians who are just busy trying to make ends meet?
Well, I think part of what this summer has opened up for people is a different sense of what the future could and might look like. And I think people are more aware than they have been, both about the fragility of the world, both the ecological, the natural, the technological. And for me, connecting those pieces is both a constant work of having the right conversations and of opening up the spaces to have those conversations. I spend part of my days running a small institute at the Australian National University where I'm trying to train a new generation of students and practitioners to help drive those conversations, because I don't just think it can be me. I think we need a whole lot of people who know how to talk about the connection between technology, humanity, and the ecology and the environment. And so we're trying to work out how to have a conversation about what it means to have a responsible, sustainable, safe future with technology. But partly what it is it's every day. I mean, it's every day you have the conversation. It's every day you think about what are the right places to put your time and your energy and your voice.
I wonder whether there's any particular importance. I just want to shift this a little bit. I wonder whether there's any particular importance for you in the fact that you are a woman who straddles an extraordinary range of intellectual skills. You are an anthropologist, you're working in the technology space. These are all big ideas you're dealing with. And we're still struggling to get, you know, even vaguely half of a cabinet in Australia made up of women. Does the women question matter to you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm acutely aware that my experience of the world is profoundly shaped by my gender, by my physical embodiment, by where I sit in a whole series of conversations. I mean, you couldn't have spent 20 years in Silicon Valley as a woman, a social scientist, an Australian inside big American tech companies and not feel acutely aware of the fact that you were often the only woman in the room. You were always coming from a different point of view. And I was raised by a remarkable community of Australian second wave feminists. And I was raised to think about the fact that inequity and disadvantage follows a very particular set of lines of power. And I firmly believe that the better world I should be building is one in which those inequities shift. And that also means a kind of constant hard work, right? I've been incredibly lucky, because I think we worked really hard for it, that the institute I direct, half of my student cohorts have been women. My faculty and my staff is half female, but it's also got other sorts of diversity and other kinds of ways of bringing different voices into the room. But yeah, I mean, I think I know full well that being a woman has shaped where I have sat in a series of conversations and how I've been perceived in them.
And your whole approach to technology and our technological future is embedded in your skills as an anthropologist. Do you think that's the way we're going to save ourselves from all of these fears we have about technology. When we start saying, well, actually, we're humans, we're actually in control, we're present.
Yeah, I take some comfort in the fact that when the first set of conversations about what the role of computers would be in society were happening, which was way back in the 1940s, so right after the war, there were a series of conversations convened in New York City by some of the first computer scientists, really. They didn't call themselves that. Some of the people they brought into the room with them were anthropologists, so Gregory Bateson and Margaret Mead in particular. And I think about the fact that those early conversations about what they then called cybernetics, which would later become artificial intelligence, those conversations were really very clearly about how did we think about the relationship between human beings and technology and the ecosystem, the environment. And they were really clear that you had to think about those three things together. So for me, there's some hope in knowing that we've had this conversation before. Now, of course, you could also go, well, we had the conversation before and it didn't land very well. So there's a bit of urgency for me about you couldn't get it right in 1946. We need to get it right now. But I do think that it's very important, particularly in Australia, but globally, that when we think about and talk about what technologies and what infrastructures we want to invest in, that we are thinking about them not just in terms of productivities and efficiencies and the GDP, but in terms of civil and civic society, in terms of what it means to be Australian, what it means to be in Australia, what it means to be in a country that has been occupied for 60 to 80,000 years. I think we have an incredible set of responsibilities, legacies, and heritage there that should let us tell a different story about the future and inhabit that story.
Well, Genevieve Bell, it's been wonderful speaking with you. Congratulations again, and thank you very much for joining us on PM.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and thank you.
Professor Genevieve Bell, AO.